Today is Tuesday. It is April 16th. The year is 2024. I'm Jim McPherson, and reading the front pages of the Hartford Current and the New York Times with me today is Kathy Danaher. Let's start with a review of the photos on the front pages of these two morning newspapers. On the front page of the Current and across four of the five columns above the fold, we have a large color picture of a dam with woods in the background. The caption tells us that this is Rainbow Dam in Windsor, and it goes with a story that has a headline that we'll get to a little later in the program, Farmington River named to most endangered list. And then below that, we have a smaller picture of a reservoir surrounded by woods. There's an older no parking sign that's in the foreground, and under that, there's a brand new no swimming sign. And the caption tells us that this no swimming sign is posted at the Rainbow Reservoir in Windsor. It happened on Monday. The water from the Farmington River is controlled by the Rainbow Dam. And below that, we have a picture of former President Donald Trump returning to the courtroom after a break Monday in New York. On the front page of the New York Times, across three of the six columns at the very top, we have a picture of Donald Trump with his attorney in court. He's seated at a table. There are police officers behind him. The People versus Donald J. Trump is the caption. For the first time in American history, a former president has become a criminal defendant. And then below that, we have an individual's hands working on some sort of a plant that's hanging up over a stick. Japan's cold hard cash is growing on the Himalaya hillsides. And the caption tells us that this is a worker in impoverished Nepal drying argelly bark, which is used to make Japanese yen notes. Those are the photos on the front pages of the two morning newspapers from which we'll be reading. Let's go now to the lead story in the New York Times and Kathy Danaher.
Israel debates punching back for Iran attack. Allies urge restraint. This by Cassandra Vinograd, Isabel Kirshner, and Michael Levinson. Israel's war cabinet on Monday met to weigh possible responses to Iran's missile and drone attack over the weekend, as the United States, Britain, and other allies strongly urged Israel to show restraint and sought to de-escalate tensions between the two regional powers. Some far-right members of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government called for a swift and forceful retaliation in response to Iran. An Israeli official briefed on the cabinet discussions, speaking anonymously in order to talk about security matters, said several options were being considered, ranging from diplomacy to an imminent strike, but gave no further details. There was no immediate public statement by the ministers or by the Israeli prime minister. Quote, "We are weighing our steps," end quote, Lieutenant General Herzai Halevi, the Israeli military chief of staff, told Israeli soldiers on Monday in televised remarks during a visit to an Israel air base. Quote, "The launching of so many missiles, cruise missiles and drones toward Israeli territory will be responded to," end quote. Mr. Netanyahu faces a delicate calculation, how to respond to Iran in order not to look weak, while trying to avoid alienating the Biden administration and other allies already impatient with Israel's prosecution of the war in Gaza. While the United States, Britain, and France strongly condemned Iran's assault and stepped in to help thwart it on Saturday, their calls for restraint highlighted the pressure Israel was facing to avoid a more direct confrontation with Iran. President Biden on Monday hailed the successful interception of Iran's airstrikes, which Iran carried out in retaliation for a deadly airstrike on Iranian embassy complex in Syria 2 weeks earlier. Quote, "Together with our partners, we defeated that attack," end quote, Mr. Biden said in his first public appearance since the strikes, speaking from the Oval Office, where he was hosting Prime Minister Mohammed Shia al-Sudani of Iraq. Quote, "The United States is committed to Israel's security," he added, "and was continuing to work toward a deal that would halt the war in Gaza, free the hostages there, and prevent," quote, "the conflict from spreading beyond what it already has," end quote. Matthew Miller, a State Department spokesman, noted on Monday that Secretary of State Antony J. Blinken had spoken to officials in Britain, Egypt, Germany, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey in an effort to ease tensions. Quote, "We continue to make clear to everyone that we talk to that we want to see de-escalation, that we don't want to see this conflict further escalated," end quote, Mr. Miller told reporters on Washington, continuing, "We don't want to see a wider regional war," end quote. Still, he added, quoting, "Israel is a sovereign country. They have to make their own decisions about how to defend themselves," end quote. As Israel considered its next move, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, warned Israel again that if attacked, Iran would, quote, "respond immediately to Israel's adventures," end quote. Quoting, "I reiterate that we are not seeking to increase tensions in the region," end quote, Mr. Amir Abdollahian said, according to Iranian state media. But he added that if American bases in the region were used in an attack, Iran would, quote, "have no choice," end quote, but to target those bases. Mr. Amir Abdollahian spoke to his British counterpart, David Cameron, on Monday amid the diplomatic efforts to prevent further military strikes. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak of Britain described Iran's attack as a, quote, "reckless and dangerous escalation," end quote, from a government that was, quote, "intent on sowing chaos in their backyard," end quote.
This headline now from the World and Nation section of the Hartford Current. Ship in bridge collapse had power issues, AP source says. This article by Eric Tucker, Leah Skeen, and Sarah Brumfield of the Associated Press. It is datelined Baltimore. The massive container ship that caused the deadly collapse of a Baltimore bridge experienced apparent electrical issues before it left port, but set out anyway, someone with knowledge of the situation told the Associated Press on Monday, hours after the FBI said that it was investigating whether any laws might have been broken. The Dolly left Baltimore's port early March 26th, laden with cargo destined for Sri Lanka, when it struck one of the Francis Scott Key Bridge's supports, causing the span to collapse into the Patapsco River and sending six members of a roadwork crew plummeting to their deaths. Four of their bodies have been recovered. Authorities announced Monday evening the recovery of the fourth body from the construction vehicle in the underwater wreckage. The person's identity wasn't released per their family's request, officials said. The Dolly experienced apparent electrical issues before leaving port, according to someone with knowledge of the situation. The person, who spoke on the condition of anonymity because they weren't authorized to comment, said alarms went off on the ship's refrigerated containers while it was still docked in Baltimore, likely indicating an inconsistent power supply. The ship's crew was aware of the issues and indicated that they would be addressed, according to the person. Officials with the National Transportation Safety Board have said their investigation will include an inquiry into whether the ship experienced power issues before starting its voyage. Board Chair Jennifer Homendy said last week that the investigation is focused on the ship's electrical system. The ship experienced power issues moments before the crash, as is evident in videos that show the lights going out and coming back on. Homendy said information gleaned from the vessel's voyage data recorder is relatively basic, quote, "so that information in the engine room will help us tremendously," unquote. The FBI said Monday it is conducting a criminal investigation into the bridge collapse that is focused on the circumstances leading up to and whether all federal laws were followed, according to a different person familiar with the matter. The person wasn't authorized to discuss details of the investigation publicly and spoke to the AP on the condition of anonymity. FBI agents were aboard the cargo ship Monday conducting court-authorized law enforcement activity, the agency said in a statement. It didn't elaborate and said that it wouldn't comment further on the investigation, which was first reported by The Washington Post. Meanwhile, Mayor Brandon Scott issued a statement announcing a partnership with two law firms to, quote, "launch legal action to hold the wrongdoers responsible," unquote, and mitigate harm to the people of Baltimore. The mayor said the city needs to act quickly to protect its own interests.
And from the New York Times, in voters' minds, Trump years now look rosier. Poll finds ex-president is seen as better on the economy. This by Lisa Lehrer and Ruth Ejelnik. Views of Donald J. Trump's presidency have become more positive since he left office, bolstering his case for election and posing a risk to President Biden's strategy of casting his opponent as unfit for the presidency, according to a new poll by the New York Times and Siena College. Though the memories of Mr. Trump's tumultuous and chaotic administration have not significantly faded, many voters now have a rosier picture of his handling of the economy, immigration, and maintaining law and order. Ahead of the 2020 election, only 39% of voters said that the country was better off after Mr. Trump took office. Now, looking back, nearly half say that he improved things during his time as president. The poll's findings underscore the way in which a segment of voters have changed their minds about the Trump era, recalling those years as a time of economic prosperity and strong national security. The shift in views about his administration comes even as Mr. Trump faces dozens of felony counts and appeared in a New York courtroom on Monday for jury election in the first of his four criminal trials. Many voters still remember Mr. Trump as a divisive and polarizing figure, giving him low ratings on race relations and unifying the country. Yet, a larger share of voters see Mr. Trump's term as better for the country than the current administration, with 42% rating the Trump presidency as mostly good for the country, compared to 25% who say the same about Mr. Biden's. Nearly half say the Biden years have been mostly bad for the country. Many of Mr. Trump's key constituencies, such as white voters without a college degree, are particularly likely to have a fond view of his time in office. But a broad swath of the country, including Hispanic voters, voters over 30, and most lower and middle income voters, now see Mr. Trump's years in office as more good than bad. Maya Garcia, 23, described herself as a former, quote, Trump hater, end quote. But now, she says, she has come to believe that Mr. Trump's contentious style helped control crime and maintain order in the country. Quote, when he was first running, I was like, what is this guy even yapping about? Like, what is he even saying? Like, he's saying all the wrong things, end quote, says Mrs. Garcia, a restaurant worker from Canoga Park, California. Quote, but to be honest, if you look deep into his personality, he actually cares about the country, end quote. She added, quoting, you know, at first I didn't like it, but sometimes we need that type of person in our lives, end quote. Ms. Garcia voted for Mr. Biden 4 years ago, but has been unhappy with his handling of the border, crime, mental health, and the rising cost of living. She plans to back Mr. Trump in November.
Returning to the Hartford Current for this headline, armorer for Rust movie gets 18 months in prison. She handled pistol in fatal shooting by Alec Baldwin on set. This by Morgan Lee of the Associated Press, and it is datelined Santa Fe, New Mexico. A movie weapons supervisor was sentenced to 18 months in prison in the fatal shooting of a cinematographer by Alec Baldwin on the set of the Western film Rust. During the hearing Monday, tearful family members and friends gave testimonials that included calls for justice and a punishment that would instill greater accountability for safety on film sets. Movie armorer Hannah Gutierrez-Reed was convicted in March by a jury on a charge of involuntary manslaughter in the death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins and has been held for more than a month in a county jail on the outskirts of Santa Fe. Prosecutors blamed Gutierrez-Reed for unwittingly bringing live ammunition onto the set of Rust, where it was expressly prohibited, and for failing to follow basic gun safety protocols. Gutierrez-Reed was unsuccessful in her plea for a lesser sentencing, telling the judge she was not the monster that people have made her out to be, and she had tried to do her best on the set despite not having proper time, resources, and staffing. Baldwin, the lead actor and co-producer for Rust, was pointing a gun at Hutchins during a rehearsal on a movie set outside Santa Fe in October 2021 when the revolver went off, killing Hutchins and wounding director Joel Souza. Baldwin has pleaded not guilty to a charge of involuntary manslaughter. He is scheduled for trial in July at a courthouse in Santa Fe. The sentence against Gutierrez Reed was delivered by New Mexico Judge Mary Marlowe Sommer, who also is overseeing proceedings against Baldwin. The judge said anything less than the maximum sentence would not be appropriate, given that Gutierrez Reed's recklessness amounted to a serious violent offense.
And from the New York Times, Speaker says funds for Ukraine and Israel will finally get vote. This by Katie Edmondson, Kayla Guo, and Carl Holsey. Speaker Mike Johnson on Monday said he planned this week to advance a long-stalled national security spending package to aid Israel, Ukraine, and other American allies, along with a separate bill aimed at mollifying conservatives who have been vehemently opposed to backing Kyiv. Mr. Johnson's announcement, coming after he has agonized for weeks over whether and how to advance an infusion of critical aid to Ukraine amid stiff Republican resistance, was the first concrete indication that he had settled on a path forward. It came days after Iran launched a large aerial attack on Israel, amplifying calls for Congress to move quickly to approve the pending aid bill. Emerging from a meeting in which he briefed GOP lawmakers on his plan, Mr. Johnson said he would cobble together a legislative package that roughly mirrors the $95 billion aid bill the Senate passed 2 months ago, but that is broken down into three pieces. Lawmakers would vote separately on a bill providing money for Israel, one allocating funding for Ukraine, and a third with aid for Taiwan and other allies. They would cast a fourth vote on a separate measure containing other policies popular among Republicans. Quote, "We know that the world is watching us to see how we react," end quote, Mr. Johnson told reporters. Quote, "We have terrorists and tyrants and terrible leaders around the world, like Putin and Xi and in Iran, and they're watching to see if America will stand up for its allies and our interests around the globe, and we will," end quote. It is not clear whether the complex strategy will be successful in the House, where Mr. Johnson has a tenuous hold on his divided conference and a bare majority. Republicans could try to block it from coming to the floor. Even if they did, the success of the aid package would hinge on a complicated mix of bipartisan coalitions that support different pieces, given resistance among hard-right Republicans to Ukraine funding and among left-wing Democrats to unfettered aid to Israel. And the plan could imperil Mr. Johnson's speakership, which is teetering under a threat to oust him. Quote, "I don't spend my time worrying about motions to vacate," end quote, he told reporters on Monday evening, referring to a snap vote to remove him from his leadership post. Quote, "We're having to govern here, and we're going to do our job," end quote. As a political sweetener for the Republicans wary of backing more aid to Kyiv, Mr. Johnson said the House would consider legislation that would require some of the funding to be paid back and that some be financed by selling off Russian sovereign assets that have been frozen.